Hey friends, welcome back to this week's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm renowned diet dietitian, trainer, and host Katie, and this is episode 332. Today, I am so excited to bring you guest expert Kimberly Knoll. She is a registered psychologist, motivational speaker, and trained by Brené Brown as a Dare to Lead and Daring Way facilitator. She's the co-founder of Momentum Walk-In Counseling Society, a nonprofit mental health counseling agency for those who would otherwise be unable to access quality services. Kimberly is no stranger to the media, and you will hear that by how she speaks on the podcast. It's so awesome. She's just a great speaker. You're going to enjoy hearing her voice, but she has actually been recognized as one of the Avenue Magazine's top 40 under 40, hit the CBC AM radio's airwaves as their parenting columnist, and she's a go-to for local news. While she's not sharing her expertise, you can find her relaxing with her husband and her two girls in Edmonton, Alberta, which is in Canada, for those of my United States friends who do not know. She plays piano. She rides horses. Like, you're going to love her, and we are talking about the stress cycle, what it is, why it matters, how to break the cycle, because take a deep breath. I don't know about you, but I get stressed, and I don't always have the best ways of managing that stress. So you're going to walk away with some tangible tips and tricks and better understanding of how stress looks like for you and what to do about it. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food and their bodies. I'll also share my experience working with clients in my private practice to help women find food freedom and body confidence. I'm on a mission to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears. Kimberly, welcome so much to the podcast. We're so happy to have you.
Oh, this is great. I'm so excited to talk to you.
So fun story for our listeners. Emily, who is listening to this because she is both of our podcast editors, she makes the podcast magic happen. And so Emily listens to all of Fit Friends Happy Hour, and she's always sending me, I think you should talk about this. And she works with you and said, Katie, you have to interview Kim on your podcast about this topic, and here's what you should talk about. So thank you, Emily, for connecting us and inspiring this topic. It's so fun.
It feels like dating a little bit.
It does.
I think we really like this person.
It's a blind date, but we were set up by a mutual friend, so we know it's going to be good.
We love and trust, so this will be good.
Yes. So tell us just a little bit about yourself. What's your story with food and fitness, and how did you get into the work that you do now?
Oh, goodness. Okay.
Loaded well, question.
I'll try to keep it brief. Food and fitness. That's interesting. I haven't really been asked that question before, so I'm excited to dive into it. So I'm a psychologist. And so my psychologist brain tells me, and this could be true or not, I'm not sure, but we'll see, that because I've never thought about food and fitness until I was 40. And I think the reason why is because I grew up in a stressful home, and kids typically do one of two things when they encounter stress. They either overindulge in things or underindulge in things in order to control their circumstances. And basically, kids can control what goes in and what comes out of their bodies, and that's kind of it. So I was one of those kids that just stopped eating under stress. So the only thing I really learned about food and weight was that my mom was always on a diet. We had skim milk in the fridge, which apparently I loved. And I don't know, I just never really thought about it. But then I got hit 40. And then, I'd had two kids and I don't know, perimenopause, stress, burnout, all the things started happening to me. And I gained 20 pounds in 2 years. And I was completely baffled about what to do about that. So I'm still on the journey of figuring it out. But let me tell you, it's as much of an emotional and mental and intellectual journey as it is anything else. And I'm kind of loving this ride.
I love that you followed up with, and I'm loving this ride because it is a journey. And I think our listeners can relate to that of just ebbing and flowing in these different seasons of life. And it's, I think it's great to also hear that, you know, when it comes to diet culture, just, you know, experiencing your body and all these different seasons, you can have quote unquote no issues until a certain point, and then something happens. And we're going to dive into specifically stress today, which I can't wait. But let's backpedal before we go there. And like, so where did your, how did you become a psychologist? Your work is super interesting. So
thank you. Well, you know, again, I told you I grew up in a stressful household. And I think one of the thoughts I had a lot as a kid is, why am I the sanest person in the room while I'm the youngest? A lot of things didn't make sense to me about the adults in my life. So I really had an affinity for that. I really wanted to know why people do what they did. And so I ended up becoming a teacher first. But then, of course, my curiosity grew about the kids. Why are they doing the things they're doing? And what's people's motivation? And how do I help with that? And I think, too, because I didn't have a lot of help with the struggles I went through, I was really curious about what does help. So then that naturally led to becoming a psychologist initially for kids, but now I'm actually in the leadership space because in between those two things, I started a nonprofit charity for people who couldn't otherwise access mental health therapy. And so I ran that organization for 7 years and in the process got to train with Brené Brown twice and so became a Dare to Lead and Daring Way facilitator. And so after I retired from it was called Momentum Walk-In Counseling, still is, still a great organization here in Edmonton, Canada. Then I started working with leaders and high-performance athletes. And so that's on my one-on-one practice where I am today. But then I'm also facilitate lots of Dare to Lead groups, and that's been amazing.
For listeners who maybe live under a rock and aren't familiar with Brené Brown's work, can you share what does that mean?
Yeah. So Brené is a researcher out of the University of Houston in Texas, and she researches shame and vulnerability, which sounds really awful, but actually has come up with some really interesting results from her research. And so she had a viral TED Talk in, I think, 2012 about shame and vulnerability. And after that, and during that time as well, she started writing books. And so one of the first ones I started with was The Gifts of Imperfection. So good. But she's got Braving the Wilderness, I Thought It Was Just Me, Daring Greatly, Rising Strong, Dare to Lead, which is all about leadership. And then, of course, her latest one is called Atlas of the Heart. So she's got a Netflix special and HBO special. So, you know, just Google her. You will learn a lot. But what I love is that all of her trainings are based on research. So this is actually what works for people. And it's great. And it pushes you. And I swear at her every day because she pushes me even still. But that's okay. That's, you know, discomfort is learning. So that's and where we're at.
And we are all about evidence-based, research-based here on the show. So the amazing little plug, and we'll definitely be sure to link to those things in the show notes as well. So let's talk about today's topic, which is the stress cycle. And I'm sure we have this thought in our head what it is, but let's hear from you, an expert. Like, explain to us, what is the stress cycle?
Mm-hmm. So this comes from other researchers who Brené loves. Their names are Emily and Amelia Nagoski. They wrote a book called Burnout. And the stress cycle is what our brain is and body are used to experiencing. But keep in mind that our brain and our body was, you know, evolutionary wise, was basically formed in primitive times. And so what we experience today is kind of a very intense world that our brains were never really meant to exist in. And so the stress cycle back in primitive times was when, you know, like generally we were calm beings. We kind of lit our natural state is a state of calm and happiness. And so imagine we're out hunting and gathering and, you know, cooking dinner and sleeping and doing all the things we do as humans. And then we encounter, let's say, a bear. Well, what happens? I mean, it's the fight, flight, or freeze kind of response. And so you do something typically, usually run away or fight. And then hopefully you outrun it and survive. And if you do, you go back to your people, you tell them the big story, you gather a group, you go out, you kill the bear, you eat it for dinner, and you celebrate. And then your stress is gone, you've eliminated the threat, and you're good to go for another day. So what happens biochemically is that you see a stressor, you have some adrenaline, and then you kind of fight, flight, freeze typically, and then the stressor goes away, and then that system shuts off. So that's what's supposed to happen.
I was just going to, this would be my next question. So that's what's supposed to happen. However, yes, my brain is already going a million different directions about all the different stressors that we experience in today's day and age that don't end so seamlessly. It doesn't, the cycle doesn't seem to close. So what does that mean?
Yeah.
What do we do with that?
Okay. So our primitive brain, I mean, it's really adorable and means well, but it basically perceives anything now. I mean, yes, we do have some things that'll kill us, but that's not that common anymore. But it perceives anything that causes us discomfort now as a threat. So instead of being a bear, it's your looming deadline, or it's having a hard conversation with your boss, or it's X, Y, and Z, right? And so in our daily lives, we actually experience a ton of stressors, even just driving to work, right? Someone cuts in front of you. And so what's happening is typically we're not completing that stress cycle. And then what's happening is that adrenaline mechanism is just, it's like a tap that you leave on. It's just always on and it never shuts off for us. So we have a lot of body and brain symptoms that result. And a lot of us are living lives where, you know, we throw around the term, I have anxiety all the time. I have panic. I'm not sleeping. I'm stress eating. I'm, you know, drinking a lot of wine. I mean, name it. It's a numbing mechanism. Mm-hmm. I'm scrolling on Instagram, right? And so we're doing a lot of things in our world to cope with these stressors that are actually not helpful and not productive.
Amen to all of that. Absolutely. Would that be the same as, you know, you hear chronic stress? Mm-hmm. Is that kind of essentially what happens when people experience chronic stress?
I would, you know, anecdotally say that most people living in modern world have chronic stress. Absolutely.
So interesting, because gosh, I feel like there's so much research. I would have to, you know, pull up and dive deeper, and I'm probably going to now after talking about this, of, you know, the negative health consequences of chronic stress. So from your experience and working with clients, and especially with high performance athletes as well, like, how does stress actually manifest in our physical body? How can someone even start to recognize, you know, I'm sure people are listening are going, yes, I know I'm stressed, but like, how do people actually pinpoint and identify, like, okay, I am in a stressful state. This is not my norm. This should not be my normal.
Yeah, this is, well, number one, just even asking that question is a good thing, because what happens is when we have this amount of stress, and even kids are under a tremendous amount of pressure, way more than they were ever meant to be, we start disengaging our mind from our body, right? And so what happens is we are very disconnected from the physical symptoms, let's even say of adrenaline. So, you know, we can all imagine, let's imagine we're watching a scary movie and something pops up, right? There's that immediate kind of, oh shit, kind of moment. And your heart races, your breathing increases, and you kind of feel funny, right? So we all know that feeling. But the thing is, after a while, when you feel that over and over and over again, and consistently, we start to ignore it, because it's such a essentially stressful feeling that there's no way we could possibly manage doing everything we need to do in a day and noticing all of those symptoms. The problem with ignoring it is that then we're not actually addressing or acknowledging the fact that we have a problem. And so how we feel it in our body is muscle tension, heart racing. You know, people experience shortness of breath. Lots of people are having what we actually term panic attacks, you know, to stressful situations. And a lot of times they don't even know where it's coming from. Although when I talk to them, we figure it out, but because everything comes from somewhere, but it feels like it's from out of the blue. But honestly, people get sick more often. It affects every organ in your body. Mm-hmm. And so any symptom you could think of absolutely could be attributed to stress and how we're not completing the stress cycle. So the thing that I kind of, I think really pertains to what we're talking about today is the fact that we are so out of tune and out of touch with our mind and our body connection that we end up numbing, right? Mm-hmm. So we're not addressing the root problems. We're not addressing the issues we're having with boundaries in relationships. We're not addressing our dissatisfaction with work or the fact that our child is failing math. Like, we're pushing that aside and we're using lots of coping and numbing behaviors, which are different than comfort behaviors. So coping and numbing behaviors actually have negative long-term consequences. So it's, I don't want to feel badly now, so I'm going to stress eat, or I'm going to drink a bottle of wine, or not exercise and just sit on the couch and watch a movie or something. And not that any of those things are a bad thing, but it's when we try to avoid our emotions that that's a problem, because they often have negative consequences. We end up consuming more calories. We don't exercise. We're not addressing the real problems that we're having.
And it just keeps going because they're not getting addressed. And as you were talking, this made me think about how many of our listeners experience that diet cycle. And it may likely be because I'm figuring out a new way to cope. I'm going to go to the next diet. I'm going to try the next, you know, thing to control versus actually addressing the root cause. Can you talk, you talked about coping versus comfort. I want to dive deeper there because I've never heard it explained like that, but it makes so much sense.
Yeah. So real comfort helps you feel better, but doesn't have a hangover, quote unquote, attached to it. So there isn't a negative. So for example, I have written out a comfort wisdom list. So it's all the things I think of ahead of time. So when I'm feeling badly, whatever it is I'm feeling, that I have a list to turn to. Because in the moment, our brains aren't really good at being rational.
No,
so that's that primitive brain part that's trying to keep us safe, right? It's like, fix the problem now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for example, if I'm tired, which I often am, one of the things on my list is lay down for 10 minutes. Shocking, I know, but it's like, address the actual issue. Typically, what I've done in the past is I'll drink some coffee and eat a cookie, because those are immediate hits of caffeine and sugar, right? But really, what I truly need is just a timeout. And so, or I love chamomile tea, for instance. And so I'll make a pot of that if I'm feeling stressed, instead of stress eating when I'm not hungry. Mm-hmm. Or I might choose to go for a walk instead of having a bottle of wine. Or I might choose to, in fact, I love baths with like Epsom salts and smelly things. Do that when I'm feeling stressed instead of, you know, yelling at my husband.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be, yeah, it's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah.
I think that's such a useful tool, and even just a different perspective shift for listeners. Like, can you even identify in your life what are the things that you're coping with and what things actually bring you comfort? Because I think sometimes that list, like you mentioned, gets muddled. It gets tangled.
Yeah. And you need to do it ahead of time, right? Like, this isn't something you can come up with in the moment, but it's so useful. In fact, even things that, you know, some people would say aren't good for you, like chocolate, anything in small amounts is actually comforting, right? Mm-hmm. I love to nibble on a piece of high quality chocolate. That's delicious and comforting to me, right? Eating 12 chocolate bars, not so much. It gives me a stomachache.
Mm-hmm. It's going back to, it so ties into intuitive eating beautifully because it's recognizing, what do I actually want? And if I do want to use food as a comfort, I'm actually going to be intentional about that choice and not just eat to eat because it's there and it's kind of this autopilot. It's no, I'm actually responding to the need versus reacting to what I'm feeling.
Well, and I think the big part of this is really about doing it with intention, mm-hmm. right? When we do things intentionally, we can create the result we want. It's when we do it impulsively, which we all do. Like, I'm certainly not perfect at not being impulsive, but we just make poorer choices because our primitive brain is just, it doesn't think about consequences. It doesn't think about future goals and plans. It says, stop the pain now using any means necessary. So, yeah, no, it's just not a good decision maker.
Yeah. I had this conversation with my friend and for listeners, Lauren. Lauren is the friend. Lauren used to host this show with me way back when we first started. And she is also the reason I know Emily. So there you go. Fun fact there. But we were talking about this concept of delayed gratification and how just that bleeds into all areas of our lives. And how do you feel like that relates to stress and coping?
You know what? Our primitive brain, I mean, it is so strong. And, you know, when we're in the middle of something difficult, we absolutely automatically enter into that fight, flight, or freeze kind of mode. And we do it a lot. We're just not necessarily aware of it. But fortunately, we do have another part of our brain called the prefrontal cortex. And that's where we make really good decisions, right? And we can think about delayed gratifications and plan ahead and think about our future selves and all those great things. And so that's where we have to really use it and work with it, because we know that our primitive brain is going to hijack us in moments of stress. So, you know, if we can use our prefrontal cortex to make a good plan, to talk ourselves through stress, you know, be like, it's okay, like kind of be like the parent figure, like you're going to be fine. Nothing's gone wrong. Like, just wait a minute, feel your feelings. It'll pass. If we can, you know, work with it as much as possible, then that will really help us be able to reach our future goals.
It's so hard. It's so uncomfortable. Nobody likes it.
They're at odds. Like, there's no question. There's a little war going on in your mind. That's what it feels like.
Do you have, I mean, you've already given us so many great tips and little nuggets and tricks. Do you have any other like techniques that you like to use with clients specifically? Like, how do I manage my stress? How do I use that prefrontal cortex and how do I plan? Because I'm bad at it and it's difficult.
Yeah.
What do I do? How do I do it?
Seriously. Yeah. Lots of folks have researched how to create habits, right? So we are not really good decision makers. Like, we have kind of a finite amount of ability to, like, our brain gets tired really fast, actually. Like, a third of our calories go just to our brains because it takes a lot of energy to think, right? But it's like a muscle. It gets tired throughout the day. And so if we're able to plan things out and be more routine in our days, that can really help. And Emily and Amelia did some research about what actually helps us complete that stress cycle. Because remember before, like, we were talking about how we have all these daily stressors, but we don't really have a way, or we don't think we have a way to turn off that adrenaline mechanism, but we actually do. And it's funny. You all know the answer, but you, I bet, didn't put these two together. Do you want to know what it is?
Breathing. No, I don't know.
Exercise.
Oh, yes. We love that answer.
Right. So what happens is, remember my story from the very beginning of this conversation where we either fought the bear or we ran away from it. Mm-hmm. In both scenarios, we did something physical. So that physical movement tells our brain that we're doing something about the problem. In our modern world, where we get much less physical exercise, our brain never gets the signal to shut off because we're not letting it know that we're doing something about the problem. And sometimes we're not doing something about the problem. So then it says, we still have a problem. We still have a problem. We still have a problem over and over all day long. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of shove that message aside. And it says, okay, well, if you won't address it, I'm going to live in your shoulder or in, you know, your headache or in your stomach ache or wherever, right? So it's like, I'm not going away. You need to address the problem. A lot of us don't know how or are scared to address the problems. And so we don't. But if you can plan in your day to put at least 20 minutes of vigorous exercise into your routine, that helps tell your body you can shut off the adrenaline. It helps to metabolize it as well. And you can now relax and go to sleep and have a good sleep.
It can be 20 minutes. It can be just doesn't have to be a lot to get the benefits. Gosh, we could talk about the benefits of exercise all day here. I want to go back to how you mentioned too, though, that it's showing up in my shoulder. It's showing up in these different parts of the body. And we've had some experts that have talked a little bit about like somatic work, but how can even just identifying like the physicality be a tool?
Yes. Yeah, so this is where we got to get back in touch with our body. And, you know, however you choose to do that, but when you're noticing, like in my 40s, because I was burning out, part of why I retired from, you know, the nonprofit charity was I'm not living a balanced life. I was working too much and not paying enough attention to myself, hence the weight gain and the mental stress and struggle. And so, you know, the things that can be so helpful is to take time, whether it's meditation, whether it's just laying in bed and doing a body scan, but really paying attention to number one, where does my body hurt? Because I can tell you, after I retired after 7 years and I did a body scan, there was like 10 things that were a problem in my body that I had just kept pushing aside and ignoring. And like, and then when I started to unravel that ball of wool, oh my goodness, I was like, geez, how did I live this way for all this time? You know, everything from allergies to I got plantar fasciitis to, yeah, hip pain to like, oh goodness me. So when you start to pay attention to that, one of the things that you can ask your body is, what is this tension about? And think about what you think about. In fact, I had a massage therapist once, who was very in tune with me, who noticed what I talked about as she massaged different muscles.
So interesting.
Wow. I wonder if this issue is residing, let's say, in your shoulder.
Taking massage therapist to a new level.
Like, oh, yeah, amazing kind of stuff. And I just thought, like, I don't know how true that is, but I just thought it was
super. Oh, I think there's got to be some truth to that. That makes so much sense.
Well, and at the end of the day, our body is wise, right? And so if there is a lesson I can learn from my body, I'm open to hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm open to being curious about that.
And it's my body. It's my experience. So what I learn from it is it's about me. It's about me and my experience, and that in itself holds so much value.
Yeah. Just checking back in, reconnecting, you know, especially those things that just don't seem to be going away. Like that muscle tension that just doesn't seem to be leaving you. Like what, as Brené would say, what's the cave you fear to enter? What's the thing you're afraid of addressing or afraid of admitting, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where therapy can really be helpful.
Love therapy. We are big advocates of therapy here on the show.
Hey, even I have a therapist. If your therapist doesn't have a therapist, don't go to that therapist.
Wise words.
Number one.
red flag. Yeah. What about, you know, listeners who maybe have physical limitations or like going out for 20 minutes, like they really struggle with maybe chronic pain or some sort of physical limitation. Like, do you have any tips for those types of folks?
Yeah, absolutely. So you actually reminded me of one other thing I wanted to say before I get to the physical limitation thing, which is a time limitation. Because I know even my kids who are teenagers, they're 14 and 16, you know, they'll feel stressed right before they have to write a test, for instance. In fact, my oldest is taking her driver test tomorrow. And we're going to do this thing I'm going to tell you about before the test, because that's going to really help. So even doing 10 jumping jacks can be helpful, right? So it's not like you're going for a 20-minute run or walk, but it's something to help metabolize that adrenaline. So that can even be helpful in a pinch. But if you are not in a position, maybe you're actually in bed at night, or maybe you can't do jumping jacks or run or walk. Part of what can be so super helpful is tensing your muscles and relaxing them. So I'm sure you've heard of progressive relaxation, where you start with your feet and then work your way up your body. Mm-hmm. That can be like just tensing and releasing muscles can also be really, really helpful.
So accessible. And you could even do that, or at least parts of it, if you're in a situation where you don't want people to watch you,
or even an airplane or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Where people are experiencing maybe those social settings where people are experiencing that.
Yeah,
that high anxiety, that stressful. My goodness, I'm recognizing it. I feel the adrenaline. How do I might not be able to shut it off, but how can I turn the nozzle, like you mentioned, to just slow it down?
Yeah. So, you know, like we've kind of mentioned earlier, actually getting out and doing something for 20 minutes is the best idea, but there are definitely these little hacks that in a pinch, they work.
What do you find, you know, I love that for kind of the everyday listener, everybody who it's so accessible. I'm just out of curiosity, what are things that like your high performance athletes do who maybe have a lot more adrenaline, they have a lot of the physical stress on their body? Like, what types of things do you find work well for those folks to continue to perform well?
Absolutely. So this last piece is the piece that is fundamental as well, which is the part where, remember, we go back to the tribe and we tell them all about it. We actually need to share our stories with people. And so talking to other people, you know, it can feel vulnerable sharing the tough things we go through, but that is really, really helpful. So again, if you don't necessarily have a social circle that you want to share with, friends or family, you know, get a therapist or a coach, and that can be really great. And that's what my high performance athletes do. So number one, they use mindfulness to ground themselves. They're usually about to do a physical activity, so that's kind of taken care of. But you know how our minds can worry about all sorts of things. So for example, I used to competitively show horses. And so being on top of a horse, they feel if you're nervous, and they get nervous then too. And what I would worry about are things like, which judge do I have? Does my hair look okay? Who are the other competitors in my class? You know, is this big cloud going to produce a rainstorm? You know, is this flower pot going to blow over? Or who's watching me? Like all those things that would distract me from the task at hand. Mm-hmm. And so when you can spend a few minutes learning how to breathe, ground yourself, feel your body, and just really be able to focus on your task and not get distracted by things outside of you that you don't control, that can be really helpful. And then also using that focus for the skill performance. And then afterwards, celebrating with your team, like having the conversation, reviewing what happened. And if like showing horses was a solo sport, so I would talk to the other competitors. I'd talk to my horse. I would come and about it, right? Like, so doing the mindfulness piece, checking in with your body, doing the activity, and then sharing it, so helpful. And we're a lonely nation. We're a lonely society. So reaching out more, connecting more with people is vital.
And I love that you mentioned just sharing it, because that practice of number one, recognizing what you accomplished or what you went through, what you experienced, it kind of solidifies that experience in your brain.
Yeah. And you get to learn from it, even if you didn't win. And let's say you came in dead last, which I have before. It's not a success only journey this life. Sometimes mm-hmm. we have setbacks and failures. But when I review it, it's like, oh, okay, I see what I could have done differently, or I experimented with this thing. It may not have worked out. So I would change this for next time, right? So we kind of call that failing forward, right? Which is, what can I learn from these setbacks that I can take and use? And had I not had that experience, I wouldn't have this new, fun, good information that would actually lead me eventually to a win. So it's really good to have that kind of mental review, you know, and sharing it with other people, possibly even getting other advice.
Yeah. And it's so applicable to so many areas of our life, whether it's you're figuring out how to manage your stress, whether it's you're figuring out how to eat intuitively, maybe it's, you know, something at work. Like, you could take those tips really in any area. I love that.
Well, I'm going to tell you, just from my experience running a mental health clinic where we saw thousands of people, I can't even tell you how many people came in who would tell us that their main issue was anxiety and panic. And then we would ask questions like, when's the last time you had something to eat? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it was days.
Wow.
Like, actual physically days, to which my mind goes, aren't you starving?
A starved brain.
Three meal a day kind of girl. Like, oh my goodness.
I always tell clients, a starved brain is an anxious brain. It's a stressed brain. It's
okay. But get this. Then they would tell me, oh yeah, I've just been drinking coffee all day. Well, no wonder you're vibrating. Your brain vibrating, has no nutrients and a lot of caffeine and possibly sugar. Oh, so then I, you know, would feed them and get them to
snacks in the office.
Water. Yes, we absolutely did. Yeah. And we called it sandwich therapy because amazingly
that.
Things would look better afterwards. And, you know, not saying that cured their entire life, but then they have the capacity to cope with whatever they're coming to us with. Right. And yeah. So just even that knowledge, I'm always amazed that people don't connect that what they put into their body affects their emotions.
And that's something we actually talk a lot about with clients and in my practice is, if you are struggling with feeling connected or with reconnecting to your body, start by having some sort of schedule. We talked about going back to that routine. Maybe that means setting a timer on your phone of, okay, I'm going to eat something at these regular intervals because I'm too high stress right now that it's hard for me to connect. And I'm not going to recognize those cues because I'm functioning at such a high stress level that I can't recognize the cues to then respond to them.
Yeah. We have to retrain our bodies because we've trained them sometimes out of our intuitiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always helpful. So, because that's always the question I like to help ask is this helpful? Is this getting you what you want? Is this how you want to feel? And if it's not helpful, let's change it.
And I bet a lot of listeners can go, nope, not helpful. That is not helpful. What else could I do? Kim, this has been so good, so interesting, so fascinating. I think so many little golden nuggets that our listeners can take. So if they want to listen to your podcast or connect with you, where can they learn more?
Yes. Well, they can find me just about everywhere that Emily puts me. My podcast is called Therapy Explained. So I like to demystify therapy for people and spell out the reasons behind why the interventions I use with clients work. And so that's what I talk about each week. My website is called KimberlyCannell.com, where you can find more information about just about anything about me. And I'd be happy if they'd jump on over and have a listen.
Yes. And we will link to all of those things in the show notes. And as we wrap up, we'd love to ask our listeners, what is the best thing that's happened to you this week?
You know what? I was in Mexico this week.
Oh my goodness.
Well, that was pretty
probably
fun.
Cold in Canada right now.
You know, this is unusually, we don't have any snow at the moment, which is very, very unusual. So the farmers are a little worried, but I'm loving the weather. So it's around, oh, in Fahrenheit, just above 30 degrees. So we're actually loving this. We're getting sunshine, but Mexico is hot. It was very hot. We went surfing and snorkeling and also hiking, all sorts of good things. Had lots of good food too.
That sounds wonderful. Oh, love that. So that's to our listeners, consider that your sign to book the vacation. If you're looking for a sign, there you go. That's it. Yes. Go to Mexico.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks so much, Kim, for joining.
That was fun. Thank you, Katie.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe or follow wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.